And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing all that's going on with the New York Giants. If you want to weigh in on some of the latest news with respect to them cutting Rashad Jennings and Victor Cruz, we'll get into that a little bit later on. And today is the first day, Paul, that they can hand out the designations for the franchise tags as well as the transition tag. So I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of speculation on who may be a candidate. And the Giants have two in particular, and that is JPP and Jonathan Hankins.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. The Giants certainly would like to have these two guys back. The question is, of course, at what price and at what number are they comfortable coming back? And then again, you've got players who will always tell you they want to reach free agency because it's the first chance they've got in their careers to peddle themselves on the open market. Remember, when they come out of school, they're drafted. And so they don't get a chance to see what's out there. So it's going to be very interesting.
With that being said, for more insight on who may be designated with the franchise tag and the transition tag and some other news and notes around the NFL, we're now joined by Judy Batista, columnist for NFL.com, also a contributor for the NFL Network. Judy, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
How you doing, guys?
Doing very well. Well, as I noted, this is the first day where NFL teams can give out the designations for the franchise tag and the transition tag. And Judy, I know there's a number of candidates across the NFL landscape. Let's start, though, with the players that impact the Giants. And JPP and Jonathan Hankins are at the top of the list in terms of two players that the Giants could think about giving out the tags. How do you see things playing out with those two players in particular?
Well, I don't right now, as things stand, I don't think the Giants will tag them. Certainly, JPP has made it very clear he has no interest in playing on a one-year deal again, crystal clear. But certainly, I think they're going to make the Giants are going to make a run at trying to keep him, trying to get a long-term deal done. I don't think they want to use the tag because he would be extremely well compensated if they use the tag on him again. Let's be honest, if he hits the open market, I think he's gone probably. So this is going to be an interesting few weeks here to see, you know, how the negotiations play out and what the Giants ultimately do.
Judy, I think a lot of people around New York understand the value that JPP and Jonathan Hankins have to the Giants. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's two-fourths of their front four, which played extremely well during an 11-win playoff season. The question becomes, is the value of those players to the Giants more than maybe what other teams outside this building would value them as? Because ultimately, that's how you start playing the guessing game in terms of the numbers that they may get elsewhere.
It's also, as you all know, it's a question of what kind of money do other teams have available to spend that perhaps the Giants do not have available to spend. I mean, you know, there are teams that are going to have much more cap space, even though the Giants created, you know, a good chunk of cap space this week with the releases. There are teams that are going to have much more space. And if a team is desperate for pass rushing help, are they in a position to spend a lot more money on that position than the Giants may have, you know, JPP slotted for? Keeping the defensive front intact is clearly something that the Giants would prefer to do. They played extremely well. JPP would be another year removed from the injury. He played, I thought, really, frankly, surprisingly well last year. Certainly that would be the priority to keep everything intact. But it's not just a question of what the Giants would prefer. It's a question of what's going on around the league and what do other teams have available that they could spend on. Because, as you guys know, the cap goes up every year. Teams are flush with money. Is there a team out there so desperate for pass rushing help that they will, you know, throw the yard at JPP?
Judy, we've been talking about this particular topic with these two guys now on this program for several weeks. Let me throw this at you. Between Hankins and JPP, it's not just the dollars thing. It's also, like you said, how much can the Giants afford? And then you also have to look at their depth chart and what they can hope to acquire if those guys leave the roster. In your opinion, which of the two, and I know the numbers come into play here, is the more important to keep on this roster so that opening day they've got at least three-fourths of their defensive line intact?
Look, I think JPP, even given the limitations he has because the hand, is a rare, rare talent. Talents like that don't come along all the time. They are difficult to replace. That's not to say you want to be in a position of having to replace Hankins, but I mean, people like JPP just do not come along. You know, they nurtured him. They developed him. You know, I think a player like that is more valuable.
Talking with Judy Batista, columnist for NFL.com, also contributor to the NFL Network. And Judy, as you noted, you know, it's important from a continuity standpoint for the Giants to keep this defensive line together, given the fact that they made a significant jump statistically from 2015 to 2016. But, you know it's very difficult financially, even with the cap going up, to have so much money designated to just one facet of an NFL team. So with that being said, and what you've seen across the NFL landscape, is it realistic, knowing that they just handed out a pretty big contract to Olivier Vernon a year ago, that they can then afford to bring JPP back with that perhaps type of money and then have enough flexibility to worry about addressing some other needs on offense?
That's a really good point. This is what I would say. You just got the defense together. You spent a boatload of money to upgrade the defense. You just got it together. You don't want to start subtracting pieces now. Now, certainly the question is, can the Giants convince JPP of a reality? He's not going to get the Olivier Vernon-sized contract from the Giants. Could he get it elsewhere? Well, we don't know that. And the question then is, can the Giants persuade Jason to take something less than that and remain on a defense that is clearly rising and in a position to go to the playoffs again? I mean, you know, where does he value all of these things? Now, if he wants top dollar, it's probably going to have to be somewhere else. I mean, he's, you know, the Olivier Vernon contract that would have been his, barring, you know, if the accident hadn't happened.
Sure, yeah.
It's not happening.
No, it can't at this point. The Giants just don't have flexibility to do that. Let me ask you this, Judy. Do you think, and we all heard Jason talk during the final weeks of the season about how he will not accept a one-year deal, he will not take the tag, he has to have security, he wants the multi-year contract, he thinks he gave the Giants somewhat of a break this year in the one-year deal that he signed. Do you think, from what you've heard, that his desire to be here will outweigh the possibility that I think we both realize he's probably going to get higher number offers outside the building?
Well, look, you and I both know that this is the time of the year where people are putting out feelers to see what he might be able to get elsewhere, right? I mean, they are judging what his market would be elsewhere. So I think the question is, you know, what is the priority for him? If it's to get the top dollar contract, and by the way, I never blame a player for chasing the dollars. They have a very short lifespan. They should get whatever they can. But if that is the priority to get the biggest contract, it's going to almost certainly be elsewhere. So that's fine. But if they can persuade him, if the Giants can persuade him, look, you are on an impressive defense that had made an enormous upgrade last year. You can still go higher. You're a playoff team. Hopefully they improve other facets of the team and make it, you know, a team that could go deeper into the playoffs. If they can convince him of all of those things that's better for him, then maybe they have a shot at it. I think they're going to make a run at it. You know, how much does it play in his head that the Giants stayed with him last year? Maybe he played for less than he wanted last year, but the Giants stayed with him after the accident at a time when a lot of people around the country thought the Giants should cut bait. So how much is that in the back of his mind when they actually sit down and negotiate?
Sure.
That's a great point in terms of the loyalty factor and whether or not, you know, he's here comfortably more so than perhaps moving elsewhere. But, you know, as Judy, you noted, all it takes is one team that wants to throw a boatload of cash at you. And then
we see it every year at every position that some team will come along and it's not a reflection on the player, but some team will come along desperate and throw so much money that your jaw drops. Well, you can't blame a player for going after that. They have very short careers. They should get the money for their
And you know
families.
What, Judy? To be fair, look at the free agent list of pass rushers available. Outside of Chandler Jones, is there anybody else besides JPP who could demand top dollar? Probably not.
No, so, and Chandler Jones is going to get the franchise tag if they can't work.
Exactly.
I mean, they said it out loud in Arizona. So you know, you can pretty much eliminate him from the market. So that means, you know, it's JPP is out there if you want that guy.
Judy, speaking of what's going on with respect to the rest of the league, you alluded to Chandler Jones from the Arizona Cardinals, a player that at least impacts what's going on in the NFC East, and I'm sure the Giants are going to be paying close attention to, is the Redskins quarterback situation. And yeah. Kirk Cousins was given the tag last year. And, you know, I think if you look at his numbers, he's had two very well-respected seasons where, I mean, if I'm Washington, Judy, I would say I think there's enough substance here to say, I think this guy could be our long-term contract, and maybe it's best to at least get to the point where we give him a long-term deal, but it seems as if perhaps this could be another year with the franchise tag. How do you see that playing out? And, I mean, from Washington's perspective, isn't at this point it being more advantageous for them to finally lock him up as opposed to having an increase in the tag each and every year?
Yes. I mean, there's no question they should try to, and they will try to get him on a long-term deal. Especially, don't forget this. This is sort of a wrinkle. Kirk Cousins has a tiny bit more leverage than he did a few weeks ago because Kyle Shanahan is now a head coach, and he is a new head coach without a quarterback, right, intact. So
sure.
Does Kyle Shanahan sort of send the signal, hey, Kirk Cousins, we'd be interested, you know, in acquiring Kirk Cousins if we could? So the Redskins have to pay attention to that. Certainly a long-term deal would be advantageous for Washington, and it's certainly something Kirk Cousins wants too. I could see them tagging him while they try to work on a long-term deal. To me, there's no question they have to keep Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, there's just no way that they can let Kirk Cousins out of the building. That would be a catastrophe for them.
You know, Judy, it's funny, though, because we all place a lot of emphasis on these 2 weeks when that tag period's open, and then at the last minute, you know, a lot of times guys will get tagged. But you and I both know, too, sometimes that tag is nothing more than a negotiating ploy because
right.
it will buy, right?
Just
it'll buy time for guys to make a deal. So,
right.
so,
it's,
so.
It's just to give everybody more time. It's just to move the deadline. That's how you have to look at the tag. It's just. Most teams do not want to have to pay, you know, the franchise tag number. They want to work on a long-term deal. This just moves the deadline.
Yeah, exactly. Besides Cousins, certainly who is a possibility to be tagged, who do you think might be, you mentioned Chandler Jones, some of the other top three or four or five names in your mind who you expect to see tags in the next 2 weeks?
Le'Veon Bell,
the
running
yeah.
back for the Steelers. There's no question he's not going anywhere. He's only 25 years old. You know, he is arguably the best player at his position right now, and he's 25. So there's no question the Steelers want to lock him up long term. He does have a little bit of a history, injuries, the suspension, so that could give the Steelers just a little bit of pause while they negotiate the long-term deal. I don't think there is any question, though, that he gets the tag if there's not a long-term deal. I think Terrell Pryor is a possibility.
Hmm.
The Browns, I think Kawan Short probably, the tackle, the defensive tackle at the Panthers, is going to get it unless there's a long-term deal. I mean, Ron Rivera and Dave Gettleman have both all but said that he will get the tag. So. Those are the, in addition to the guys we've already talked about,
sure.
Chandler Jones and Kirk Cousins, those are the guys I'd keep the eye on.
You know, one other name that I wanted to throw out, mainly because from the calls that we received from Giants fans, Judy, they seem to think that maybe the Giants are going to go after a taller wide receiver to complement the likes of Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard. And mm-hmm. Alshon Jeffrey of the Chicago Bears meets that criteria somewhat, though he's going to be, I'm sure, very expensive. He's had a suspension. You referenced Le'Veon Bell. He's also had some issues with injuries in the past. If you're the Bears right now, I mean, where are you thinking, considering, I mean, they may have a quarterback decision they have to make, defensive changes they need to make. I mean, wide receiver is a priority, but I don't know if it's necessarily the top priority in Chicago right now, Judy.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't think they put the tag on him because I think that would pay him something like $17.5 million.
Yeah.
But as you said, there's plenty of other things they need to be yeah. spending that kind of cash on. Yeah, I would say that given their needs, that is probably not, you know, keeping Alshon Jeffrey in the building is probably not at the very top of the list. They have big decisions. I mean, obviously the biggest is what's their quarterback situation going to be. They have space. They will have space under the cap. So they could try to do a deal with Jeffrey. I think, though, he is going to be a guy who probably hits the market. And if he does, you know, there'll be suitors for him because You know, if you have confidence that the injury and suspension history are, you know, are manageable, he's, you know, look, he's a big receiver, and the Giants are certainly not the only team that could use one of those.
Let's stay in the NFC East for a second, Judy, before we let you go. Any moves that the Cowboys or the Eagles might make in the next couple of weeks that would surprise you, that might come out of left field?
Not out of left field, I mean, but I think we're all paying attention to what are the Cowboys going to do with Tony Romo.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't have instant impact, he's not the starter anymore, I think we are all fascinated to see what do they do with him. Does he land somewhere else? Does he land somewhere else where he's the automatic starter on day one? I think that's the only thing I'm watching, you know, from the Cowboys. What might happen?
Okay, gut feeling. What happens to him?
I think he's elsewhere. Just because I think he, you know, all indications are he wants to play. He's not, you know, not ready to retire. I know Jerry Jones. There's a great personal relationship there, and I know Jerry Jones would love for him to somehow stay on the Cowboys. But if he wants to play, I think they will sort of honor that wish and try to find a landing spot for him. Can they trade him? I don't know. He's got a lot of money owed to him. Or do they end up releasing him so he can pick his next place? And I think he probably will end up at a place maybe where he is not the automatic day one starter, but where he goes into camp, you know, competing for a job. And I think he's going to want to pick his next location sort of the way Peyton Manning did, right? He's going to want drop into a ready-built situation.
Absolutely. You need an ideal offensive line and an opportunity to win. There's no
Everything.
Doubt about that.
Everything. Yes.
With respect to Tony Romo, we're talking to Judy Batista, NFL.com columnist, contributor to NFL Network. Judy, before we let you go, real quickly on the Giants, another connection that I think a lot of people are picking up on, perhaps for competition for JPP. And, you know, whenever executives from the Giants or former coaches.
Say.
Yes, I'm sure you know where I'm alluding to. But
and they've got money, by the way.
Correct. But that's why I figured I wanted your professional opinion on this. You have now Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville, and also you mentioned Dave Gettleman in Carolina. Those are two individuals that know JPP very well. And I'll even throw out Victor Cruz now that he's available because both of them also mm-hmm. know him. What are the chances that perhaps either of those two individuals receive interest from the Jaguars or the Panthers, and perhaps both of those teams are quite aggressive in going after them?
Well, first of all, let me start by saying I have not spoken to either of those teams about their interest in those guys yet. Look, as you said, that happens all the time when people go elsewhere. They sort of sniff around. They know these players better than anybody. I would say that I think there are other priorities at those teams, especially, you know, Victor Cruz is going to come presumably at a manageable price. So that's a different thing. Jason Pierre-Paul is going to be whatever team gets him, if it's the Giants or somebody else, that's going to be their biggest offseason move, almost certainly. You're not going to have a bigger offseason acquisition. So is that really the Jaguars' number one priority? I don't know. You know, maybe it is, but I don't know if that's where they're going to say, let's spend all of our money on this guy. Same thing with the Carolina Panthers. There are so many needs that teams have that you have to narrow the field down to what team is it that needs a pass rusher more than anything else, because that's going to be their big blockbuster contract of the offseason.
I'm going to sneak one final one in here, Judy, and then we definitely will let you go. We appreciate it. I know you want to get to your lunch, and I don't blame you one bit. Jonathan Hankins, bottom line, do you think the odds are better or worse that he stays with the Giants, given the market out there and certainly the fact that he plays what the Giants have turned into a very valuable position next to Snacks?
I think better. I think it's better that he stays just because, again, I think the money is, you know, is going to be more manageable. I think it'll be more difficult to keep Jason Pierre-Paul.
Cool.
All right, well, we've teased Judy enough before we let her go.
Yes.
So I think now it's legit that we will let you go and enjoy the rest of your day. Judy, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Perfect. Judy Batista, NFL.com columnist, contributor to the NFL Network, kind enough to give us a few minutes on what's going across the NFL landscape as well as the Giants. And it'll be very interesting the next coming weeks until the beginning of March, when is the deadline to hand out the tags. But she seems to think that Jonathan Hankins certainly is a player that has a legitimate shot to perhaps remain here with the Giants.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about which guy would be harder for the Giants to lose, and she's looking at it strictly from an impact player perspective, and there's no question, I agree with her, JPP's more of an impact player than Jonathan Hankins is. That doesn't mean Jonathan Hankins is not valuable, especially given the fact that he tag-teamed with Snacks to solidify the interior of that defensive line. I don't think that's the question. From her perspective, she's right. JPP is a rare impact pass rusher who you really, really don't let get away very often. I understand that. I think, you know, and I didn't want to debate this with her because it's a different angle to look at it. When we looked at it, we said, well, given what the Giants have in-house, who's easier to replace? We came up with it might be easier to replace JPP than Hankins. But again, from the outside, if you were to say, well, which player is more of an impact guy, you're going to say JPP. I totally understand that. And in all honesty, that's probably why he'll get bigger numbers thrown at him if he reaches the open market.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow. We want to thank Judy Batista once again for chiming in on the conversation. Now it's an opportunity for you out there to give us a ring on the phones at 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You want to get into Victor Cruz and Rashad Jennings parting ways with the Giants, the franchise tag, the transition tag, everything certainly up for debate here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Len in Columbia, Maryland on the line. He gets us started on Wednesday's edition of BBKL. How are we doing, Len?
Hey guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. How's things with you?
Good. Everything's good. Lance, if I could take a minute, wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame class, in particular Terrell Owens. And I share your feeling about Owens' numbers making him deserving of a Hall of Fame position this year. But, you know, I keep thinking back, and, you know, from a political standpoint, and this certainly is a lot of politics involved with the Hall of Fame voting and so forth, that this just wasn't the right year for Terrell Owens. I don't think Terrell Owens and Jerry Jones going in at the same time, these folks have long memories. And I keep thinking about Terrell Owens spiking the ball on the star at Dallas Stadium, ball 1992, maybe 93, somewhere in that range. I think Owens goes in next year. I just don't think.
Well, remember, Len, he's going to get a lot more competition in the years to come. So, I mean, I don't know if anything is necessarily guaranteed. I clearly think he's deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. And you know, the other thing that was very surprising, Len, it's not so much about, you know, when is he going to get in. It's the fact that he didn't even make the final cut. That's what I don't understand. I mean, he didn't even get to the point where the committee then narrows down the list of who gets in. He didn't even make it that far. That was really the most surprising.
I agree. And the only thing I can say is there really are a lot of politics involved. And the only thing I could come up with is, you know, he and Jones going in at the same time after the history of Owens and that, that awful action at the Dallas Stadium, 20 years ago.
Well, but Len, remember, Owens then later played for the Cowboys. So, yeah, I mean, they did get over that.
Yeah, there
he
you
came
go.
To Dallas.
There you go.
So I don't know if that's necessarily a big deal.
Well, it really was strange given the numbers. Next question for you guys. I'm struggling to find the replacement for JPP, the replacement for Jonathan Hankins, and an outside receiver, a starting outside receiver on the current roster. What do you think? Do we have guys on this roster? If one, two, well, we know Victor's gone, so there's a, you know, we got that outside, you know, outside position at wide receiver. Do we have their replacements on this roster? I'm struggling to find one. What do you think?
Well, you'd like to believe that as far as the defensive end spot is concerned, you're going to get increased production out of Okwara. You would want to believe that Odighizuwa is going to, in his third season, become, you know, at least a rotational player, if not something more. So there are two guys there you think you might be able to get something out of. And of course, Kerry Wynn is always a stopgap rotational guy, too. I mean, he's a run-first guy. He's not a pass rusher. But a defensive tackle, I mean, what are you looking at? You're looking at Bromley, Robert Thomas. To me, that's not as appetizing as the defensive end spot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just me. I agree with what Judy said. We mentioned this before. JPP is the more impactful player as opposed to Hankins. But if you look at what the Giants have on the depth chart, is there any question that there's more promise at defensive end than there is at defensive tackle?
Yeah, and even when you go back to defensive end, are you looking at part-time players and, double O with the injuries and people beginning to label him as a bust? I can hope too, but I just don't see the replacement on the roster. And how about outside receiver?
Well,
what do you say? I mean,
here's the thing.
Do we have starting caliber guys?
Here's the thing.
Left?
First of all, if you want to talk about in-house, you're looking at Roger Lewis and Tavares King, obviously. Okay.
But here's the thing.
Here's the thing. Okay. Free agencies out there. There should be guys like Holmes and Quick available who are tall skyscraping receivers who could fit that bill very admirably if you want to go that way. Or if you want to go draft, they're talking about many rounds of receiver depth in the draft this year. So it is not unthinkable to be able to get a receiver. It's a lot easier to get one of those guys to be productive right away than it is to either afford a pass rusher or to get one who's going to immediately provide sacks in his rookie season.
Okay. Let me say a word on Victor, if I might. First of all, thank you. A great player. Brought us a lot of thrills, no question. Wish he was still on the roster. And just to wish you, before my main comment, just 1 year, Giants management, just one year, next season, don't give anybody number 80. I know it's tough. You bring 90 players to camp.
Yeah.
You begin to run out of numbers.
Yeah.
We got a lot of retired numbers too. But I'd like to see just one season where nobody gets number 80.
Understandable.
Thinking back on the impact of the guy, I go back a long way, and I'm not going to take you back that far. Let me just say 25 years. I can't remember a more impactful, more important to the Giants regular season play than that 99-yarder against the Jets. What do you think, guys? I know Tiki broke off a couple of 90-yard runs in key situations, but there's something about that play.
Len, the goal line stand against the Redskins at the beginning of the 2007 season.
Yeah.
They all pointed to that play turning around the 2007 season. And then, of course, Cruz had the one with that you're talking about against the Jets in the 2011 season. Both of those plays were given credit as being the pivotal plays that started the Giants on a championship march. I don't know, other than the fact that it was the Jets, in this building, and, certainly turned the Jets in the wrong direction. If you want to add juice to it for that reason, you can. But I think in terms of the importance of the play, you look at that goal line stand in Washington and you look at that play there with Victor, they're both equally important to those championship seasons. And I don't think anybody would dispute that, to be honest.
Well, I would agree with you, Paul. Len, I just want to jump in here. I'll let you continue. I agree with you. I mean,
please,
the goal line stand is important. The only thing that I would further support Len's point about the Cruz play is the time of the game. If you remember, the Giants had a very bad start to that Jets game. I mean, they needed that Cruz play.
Yeah.
They were in desperation mode. I mean, they were backed up.
I got news. I got news for you. They lose that Redskins game. That season might be over before Halloween. Yeah.
And I get your point. I'm just saying that there's a 7-7. There's a 500 team. going up against the Jets. It's Christmas Eve. The game did not get off to a good start. Remember, the Jets jump out to a 7-0 lead.
I'm a Victor Cruz fan, but I'm not going to let you win this one.
Well, all I'm saying is that completely changed the momentum of that Jets game and then helped them surge through that playoff run. He doesn't make that play. Who's to say they win that game? That's all I'm going to say.
And if they give up the winning score to the Redskins on the goal line in the first month of the season to a division rival, that season's in the toilet.
Well, that's why I say they're neck and neck. That's why I would agree.
Let me go back to Paul's point about that play. Paul, I was in the fifth row of the opposite end zone right up against the tunnel.
No kidding.
That the visiting team comes out, obviously the Giants, that day.
Wow.
And you were in the stadium, weren't you? Where were you? Were you in the stadium that day?
In 2007, I was working with ESPN Radio, and I did not travel until the postseason.
Okay. I'm going to help you with your point, but I must admit I side with Lance. But let me help you with your point.
He's got to age him,
Paul. As they came through that tunnel, Paul, at the end of that game,
yeah,
you could see and hear the relief from Giant players.
Yeah.
At that point, they would have been 0-3 had the Redskins scored in that position. Quentin Porter still can't figure out where the hell Ross came from.
Len, over 800 yards the first two games allowed by the defense, over 80 points allowed by the defense. There were people who wanted to string Spags up by his toenails, you know, and that changed it all. The only thing I'm going to give you guys is that was early in the season. I mean, you could always argue with me. Maybe the following week they would have turned it around. With the Jets game, it was at the very end of the season.
And the margin for error is minute. It's
non-existent. So maybe I will give you a nod to that, but I don't want to in any way take away from that Redskins goal line stand. I really don't.
We've seen a lot of shots of Michael Strahan getting excited.
Oh.
I gotta tell you, Paul, when he hit that tunnel that day, he came in right behind Eli. He was off the ground.
Yeah, I believe it.
Strahan was literally off.
I believe it.
The guy was off the ground with that play. That was a wonderful play. Very important. There's just no question about it. And, hey, beginning of that ball game, Victor dropped a couple of passes. And Tom put him on the bench. It was not a good situation, not a good start early in that ball game. But I was there that day too. But listen, he was a great player. And Jennings, I was all over the Jennings. Now I was so happy that they signed him. Didn't quite work out what I hoped it would be, but he, solid guy, solid player.
Yeah.
Easy to remember Rashad Jennings. I don't think we're going to have to, I don't think we'll forget, Rashad Jennings, and certainly not Victor. And listen, if you know anybody in the front office, tell them just 1 year, guys, just 1 year.
All right, Len, thank you.
All right, Len. Take that number.
Take care.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks so much. In reference to the T.O. comment, it's obvious to me when you look at the receiving leaders, Randy Moss and Isaac Bruce are two other guys who are in the TO category in terms of stats and numbers. Now, I know Kurt Warner has said he doesn't know why Bruce didn't get in, and he was very disappointed to see that he did not land there. He at least did not have any of the other baggage, the attitude baggage that Moss had, who was accused many times of loafing over his NFL career. And, of course, we already know about the TO stuff.
Yeah, Bruce, I can't think of anything that would hold him back in terms of off the field or locker room or anything like that. And he's also been in the mix. I remember Mike Martz, his former head coach of the Rams, has come out, has been campaigning heavily for him. Kurt Warner actually coincidentally came out today and was asked about T.O. and said he thinks T.O.'s a Hall of Famer as well, as do many other people. But, yeah, what sets Bruce aside from Moss and Owens is the fact that you can't point to Bruce having any issues whatsoever.
Or any negative
impact on
his
team.
He had a longer career, but maybe not as many super-duper spectacular years within that career. You didn't see a ton of 100-yard receiving seasons because he played on a team that had so many good weapons.
Well, yeah, Torrey Holt and Marshall Faulk.
He couldn't get the ball on every play.
Of course. You have to take into consideration the talent he had around him, whereas, there were years where T.O. and Randy Moss were not necessarily surrounded by the same amount of talent.
They were the focal point many times.
They were the legit guy.
No doubt.
I would even go back and say, Was Isaac Bruce, even during the course of his career, would you have considered for a lengthy period of time him being the number one guy? Because to me, Torrey Holt was the number one guy for the greatest team on turf. And Bruce was the number two wide receiver on that team.
There were times where Holt made the more spectacular plays and had the more impressive resume, at least it appeared at times. But right now, if you were to look at the body of work, you'd have to put Bruce in and Holt not.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We'll also get to some of your tweets along the way. Right now, let's head back to the lines. Chris is in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon to you.
Real quick, man. I think Isaac Bruce, man, if I'm not mistaken, was like a youth pastor or something like that. So, you mean, you talk about, you know, living like an angel. You know, there was nothing, no blemishes on you know, his personal life, you know.
Well, and I agree with you there, but the one thing I would throw out, and I know we brought up the fact that Bruce didn't have any baggage, but to me, at least this is my personal opinion, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's not the Pro Football Hall of Fame of perfect individuals.
Good guys, yeah.
So,
right.
You know, I'm looking at what you did within the boundaries of the field. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, you want to just put anybody in, but it's a statistical argument. It's a contribution argument to the team as opposed to what everybody has in terms of the skeletons in their closet. And that's just my personal opinion when I evaluate it.
No question, man. T.O. is, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It
is. You know, it's 2 years now. And, I mean, even when Chris Carter didn't get in the first year, I was like, what is wrong with you?
But you know what, my friend, and I mean this wholeheartedly, the reason I don't like to spend too much breath on talking about guys who are being cheated out of the Hall of Fame, the one reason I don't like to do it, Harry Carson was made to wait forever.
Yes, and it wasn't until he said, hey, take me off the ballot, before they were like, oh, I guess we got to put him in now.
Harry was so sick of his friends and his family being hurt every year that he told the Hall of Fame, take me off the ballot. I don't want to put them through this anymore. And that was quite a stand-up thing to do. I'd never heard anybody do that before. And then finally they decided, oh, guess what? Harry belongs in. What a bunch of garbage. Harry Carson should have been in the Hall of Fame the first second that ballot came out for him. I mean, come on. Seriously. One of the top three middle linebackers of all time, period.
Absolutely.
Close the door.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, that's why it's just dumb to talk. Yeah, it's so dumb to talk about the guys who were made to wait, because he was the poster child for that, as far as I was concerned.
Kim, let me just throw this last question out to y'all real quick, and I'll take it off the air. I know we've talked about JPP ad nauseum, but I got a kind of a different question. Is it feasible to have two defensive ends? I mean, is it possible at all to have that much money locked up on two defensive ends, you know, with the glaring holes that we have at obvious places? Of course, we all want them back, but is it realistic for us to really see JPP suit up with the NY on his helmet again? And I appreciate what you guys do. I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much for the phone call, Chris. Appreciate that.
All right. What I'm going to do here, just as a matter of numbers, because I don't think we have anything else to go by, I'm going to look at the defensive end contracts that were out this past season, and we're going to see who would be the highest paid pairing of defensive ends in a 4-3 system in the NFL. Now, this past season, Vernon and JPP would have been the highest, okay? Next to them, it appears the Eagles with Connor Barwin and Vinnie Curry. And then Brandon Graham, if you consider the fact that all three of them were rotational defensive ends.
Yeah.
All three of them were in the top 15 highest paid defensive ends in a 4-3 scheme in the league. Now, between those three guys, Graham at 6.5, Barwin at 7.8, and Curry at 9.2, so that's 16, 22, about 23, you know, between 23 and 24 between the two of them. JPP was to get 10. He didn't quite get that with the incentives. And Vernon, 17, about 26.5. So the Eagles were able to do it, but three guys. The Giants invested roughly that amount of money in two guys. That's why I think it's – well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and two guys that pretty much played just about every single down.
Yes.
Whereas the Eagles' mindset was just going to spread the wealth.
Correct. So I don't necessarily know if the three guys compared to two guys is an adequate way to compare them, because ultimately, if you look at their total snaps, I'm sure that the Giants' two guys probably enveloped all three of the Eagles' defensive ends in their snaps. So I don't know that that's a fair way to look at this. I think if you just say those two spots on the field cost you X number of dollars, well, the Eagles pretty much spent the same number of dollars for those two spots on the field, no matter how they manned it. That's about it.
Well, if I'm correct, do I see two Dolphins on the list? Would you consider Mario Williams and Cameron Wake, right? I don't know if they're
Williams
a little bit lower.
And Wake a little bit lower.
Okay.
A little bit lower. Williams was at 8.5 and Wake was at 7.6. So, you know, you're only talking about 16 between the two of them. I don't think you can talk about that in the same conversation as what the Giants and the Eagles spent. My thought is, and I think Judy pretty much agreed when we talked to her before, if Jason Pierre-Paul is going to come in at roughly the same economic structure that the Giants had with him this year, it's clear they can do that. They were able to put this roster on the field with those numbers this year. So if they can come up with some kind of economic structure that will be close to this, I think they can make it happen. The problem comes in if Jason decides, look, the numbers are going to be the primary factor here for me, and I've got to get the Brinks truck. I've got to get the key to Fort Knox. I'm not interested in maintaining an economic structure to stay with the Giants. I just want the gold and bullion. If he looks at it that way, they're not going to be able to do it.
Because remember, you're talking about a player that just finished up a one-year deal also. Now, if you want to keep him on the books for a little bit longer than that, you have the flexibility to spread the money out across the board each and every year, depending on how you want to structure the contract. But there is a significant jump, Paul, if you look at JPP's one-year deal this year, and then let's say, this is just a hypothetical, let's say he wants to get into the ballpark of Olivier Vernon, there's a significant difference in terms of what Olivier Vernon got in year one of his contract versus what JPP got in this past one-year deal. So,
yes.
I mean, there is a sizable jump that you have to take into consideration.
Again, the one way the Giants can work with this is, or any team can, Team X can go to player Y and say, we will structure it in terms of how we guarantee the money. And it may not be the overall value that somebody else is going to offer you, but the way we'll structure it with the guarantees, you may find that palatable. For example, Olivier Vernon's guaranteed money this past season was $8 million. JPP's was $8.5 million. So if you want to look at it from that angle,
that's a way to entice a player.
Then Jason was right there. He made Vernon money this year. Depends on how you want to structure
it. The bonuses, the incentives. There are other ways to make a contract a little bit more attractive, depending on, obviously, how the player sees it. But the guaranteed money is the key. That's what it comes down to.
And this is why teams have capologists. Because announcers like us cannot get into this sticky area. There are too many little nooks and crannies like an English muffin. You like the food analogy again?
I'm just surprised you didn't go with Italian pasta for once. You're getting versatile in your old age.
You know, it's really sticky in terms of how you can manipulate it to maybe make a guy feel better about the deal.
Well, and that's why you have every team has a specialist, like you said, who just spends their days, their hours, their weeks studying the ins and outs.
I prefer to look at film.
Yes. Well, that's why you're not going to be a capologist. You're sticking to the X's and O's, not necessarily the finances. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Mike in Fort Myers, Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. There's a group of snowbirds that come on down. They were a mixture of folks from the Midwest and the Northeast and so forth. And we dissect various football teams while we go off and watch the spring training of other baseball teams. Here's a couple of observations that they have on the Giants and JPP. They think that JPP, with his injury history, really wants a multi-year guaranteed contract, not just 1 year, but a multi-year guaranteed contract.
He's already said that, by the way.
I don't think that's a stretch
He's
at all.
Made that very clear, that he will settle for nothing less.
Yep. So they're not so sure that the Giants will give him that based upon his past injury history, if you will. Whether or not they can afford it or not, that's something else again. The other thing that they, some guys from the Midwest said, hey, the tackle from Cincinnati that the Giants are talking about, they don't think he's going to go to the Giants. They think he's going to stay. I guess it's Whitworth.
Whitworth, yes. He's never, by the way, and I brought this up on yesterday's show, he's never been a free agent before in his entire career. So he has been on the record saying that he does want to stay in Cincinnati.
And I think it is important for you to realize the Giants, you just said a second ago, the Giants are talking about him. The Giants aren't talking about anybody. That would be tampering. The organization has not mentioned a breath about anybody else's players. This is simply speculation amongst fans and the media. Be careful. Just be careful, though. Just be careful.
The Giants organization.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
I recognize you guys don't speak for the Giants organization.
No, we do not.
So it's all us old guys that are looking at different people. So the other things that they had regarding Tony Romo, they think that Jerry Jones would like to keep Tony Romo as the backup, that he doesn't trust Sanchez. And they think that that would give them the best option of going ahead. The guys, a couple of guys that are Dallas rooters feel that they really lost the game because of their quarterback's inexperience, that Romo would have won the game and got them into the in the playoffs. So that's a another observation.
I'll just
from St. Louis that remember Kenny Britt when he was playing out there for the Rams. They say Britt has bad hands.
We've discussed, and I know Britt's been with a few teams now. We've discussed Quick, and we've discussed Holmes. We have not discussed Kenny Britt as a guy who we would put on our radar. So you're not necessarily putting any cold water on our ideas.
Though Britt is coming off a very good season, though, with the L.A. Rams.
We've had callers call up and say Terrell Pryor, and you've just heard Judy Batista from the NFL Network and NFL Media say she thinks he might get tagged.
It's possible. Listen, Cleveland's got a lot of cap space. They can afford to do that. It would not surprise me.
He wants to stay in the Midwest.
Well, and they can only afford to continue to lose so many players every single year. So Cleveland may be saying to itself, Pryor's a talented wide receiver who's made the transition. We're willing to at least cough up a few more bucks for him, and we'll see where he can go.
I might add, Kenny Britt has some injury history and also some off-the-field stuff,
too. Some knee issues. Well, I brought this up. Kenny Britt actually came up in the conversation yesterday with John and I, and one of the things we brought up was the fact that, you're right, he does have ties to New Jersey, and he's had some troubling issues off the field locally. He thrived when he was out of this market. So it may be better for him. It may be better for his family. That doesn't mean you don't consider him, but it is, I think, well documented that Kenny Britt has improved professionally and personally once he left this area. I think that's been well documented.
Oh, okay. A couple of observations from some of the Eagle fans. They love the fact that we might lose JPP. I guess their right tackle, and I didn't write any notes down. I think it's Johnson that came back. Was it Lane Johnson?
Lane Johnson, correct. Yes, he was suspended for the majority of the season.
Yeah, they made an observation that on his first game back, he just swatted, I guess it's Okwara, out of the way, and they kept running to the right side because we did not have JPP. So they're, saying, hey, you guys, if you let them go, you better get a better ball player in there.
Well, here's what you tell those guys. Boy, that was a grizzled veteran who's one of the better guys at his position who taught a lesson to a young rookie making only, his second or third start in the NFL. Wow, I'm real impressed by that. That just blows me away that the veteran would have taught the young guy a lesson. Gee, that's never happened before in this league. Has that ever happened before in this league?
I mean, I don't...
You know what I'm saying?
Mike, I don't think there's only so much you can read into that. And here's the other thing. Lane Johnson is a very good football player, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But, after you miss about 10 weeks worth of football and everybody else at that time of the season is worn down because they've been playing. Lane Johnson was a healthy, fresh of legs. He was almost walking in, and he had like two games under his belt. So I think there was a completely different platform in terms of where he was in the season compared to where some of the other guys on the Giants' defense were too. So like I said, there's only so much you could read into that one game. That doesn't mean that Lane Johnson's not going to thrive moving forward. Don't get me wrong.
No.
Hey, very good offensive tackle.
Let me give you a quote from a couple of the real obnoxious Patriot fans who are now down here rooting for the Red Sox. They say Belichick said, next man up. Next man up. Do your job. So they don't care whether, you know, such and such get hurt. The next guy coming up, he better play as well. If I adopt that same attitude with JPP going down, then Okwara should stand up and do his job. And that's what I didn't see missing in that particular game. I don't care whether he's your rookie or not. He's in the NFL. He just got lampasted that time. That's just an observation.
How'd he do against the Cowboys?
More comments on.
How did Okwara do against the Cowboys? Did you see that game?
Say again, please.
How did Okwara do against the Cowboys in his first ever start just a week or two earlier?
I did not get that game down here.
That was by far his best game, Mike.
Eight tackles and a sack in his first NFL
JPP.
Start. Just saying.
Okay. The other observation that folks make, and this group changes, by the way. It depends on who's got golf tee-off time.
I was going to say, this is some group.
Who's got fishing charters and whose wives want to go to the shopping malls. They made a couple of observations. We meet 3 to 4 times a week, and I can't, you know, I cut out of today's meeting. They're going back, I guess it's Charlie in Maine, that says we got problems at left tackle. Their answer is we got problems at both left and right tackle. So that's their observations. I mean, it's from different folks and so forth. They said the Giants really can't run the ball. They can't sustain it. And they also think our backs don't run with quickness and power. And so I'll let you guys comment on that. They think Perkins is shifty and maneuverable, but they just don't think we have anybody that runs with power.
All right, Mike.
Quickness and power.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for
chiming in.
You got it. I mean, Perkins, I think over time, is going to show a little bit more than perhaps what he showed in a much smaller sample size. Clearly, his elusiveness and his shiftiness is what jumps out to you after his first season, but I don't think that means that he's not capable of running up the gut and gaining positive yardage if they use him that way more consistently.
I think NFL.com, if I'm not mistaken, just today, I believe, named him as one of the 10 guys to watch as a breakout player next year.
I think that's a valid title.
You know, I will say this, okay? The Giants need to establish a power running game, and I'm saying this for the 5 trillionth time in the last 5 years. And they're going to have to get a power back to do it. Now, is it a free agent type, like an Eddie Lacy kind of guy? Is it a guy in the draft, like P. Ryan from Oklahoma? Who, by the way, I'm told is catching a lot more eyes as we lead up to the combine than I had hoped, because I'd like to see him there in the third round. May not be able to get him in the third round. But they need a guy like that. They need a Natron Means type, a power back. So I'm with you. This is not, you're not, what are you, preaching to the choir is what like they say, right? You're not giving us anything new here.
Yeah, I don't think anybody who watched the season last year is saying that the Giants don't need to perhaps improve their running game and their offensive line play. I think that everybody said that was one of the biggest takeaways from the season, and we'll see what happens with respect to free agency and the draft. I mean, the first priority, as I mentioned and as we've discussed, is, you know, thinking about what you want to do with JPP and Hankins so you know what type of money is going to be designated towards those two,
yes.
Paul, so that then you know what you're working with financially for the other needs for your team. That's why you have to take care of these two guys first.
Much like we say every spring, you got to deal with the free agency first, And then once you get that plugged, like the Giants plugged a bunch of defensive free agent holes this past season, then it's like, okay, now what do you do to supplement it with the draft? You know, you want to say to build through the draft, and I understand that because long term, that's still the plan. But because of the way that the calendar works in the NFL, free agency comes up first. So you really do have to make some significant moves, and you have to adjust your plans accordingly depending upon what's out there in the marketplace.
I mean, you can anticipate what you want to do in the draft, but that's just simply hypotheticals at this point. You don't know exactly what the direction you're ultimately going to go until you understand the ins and outs of free agency.
A longtime football guy told me many years ago, and I still think that this applies. He said, you can't go through free agency and then approach the draft with desperate needs. You're always going to have some holes to fill. You're always going to have some shallow gullies that you need to kind of, you know, cover up. Everybody has needs. Everybody has questions. But you never, if you consider yourself a playoff team, you never want to go through free agency and then go into the draft with gaping holes. One, two, gaping holes. It's okay to have a couple of kind of shallow holes, even a few shallow holes, but you never want to go into the draft with gaping holes. That's the idea. That's the plan if you believe that you're a playoff contender and you want to move forward and take it to the next level. If you leave yourself with gaping holes going into the draft, now you're causing yourself an extra stress, extra problems, because you're going to start altering where you're going to pick a guy, because it's like, oh my gosh, we got to get whatever position it is. You will alter and screw up your draft board when you have gaping holes. That's the difference, he told me, in the approach, as opposed to a team that has done its due diligence in free agency and is able to kind of spread the dirt around so that you don't have these gigantic gullies in the draft.
Yeah, there's more of an urgency approach in the draft all of a sudden. And you just don't want to put yourself in that position where you're trying to make trades that may hurt you down the line. You're reaching for guys. It's the last thing you want to do. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Lance Medow, Paul DeTino with you here. Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening? Nick,
hey,
are you there?
Walnuts.
Hi.
What's up, Lance?
How we doing, Nick?
Hey, I think you're absolutely right about Paul Perkins. Just give him a little bit of time. We already see what he can do. He just needs a big power back there to get the short yardage. He'll take care of the rest. But I had a couple questions for you guys. I know it's pre, you know, free agent, you know, signings, but if you at 23 had these players, not saying, but maybe a couple of them would be there, but let's just say these guys were there. Who would you take? Would you take a crazy, hard-hitting linebacker like Reuben Foster, and he can play special teams? Both him and Landon Collins from Alabama, imagine the two of them, the way they can tackle together. Would you take the running back Fournette? Big guy.
Well, he's not going to be there.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be there.
There's no way he's getting there. So please don't even use that as a hypothetical, because he is going to be so long gone, you won't even be able to see him with binoculars.
I know. I'm just saying. I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit. If he was there, if O.J. Howard were there, if Ramczyk were there, and if Carlton and Derek Barnett, which I would like that guy to come to the Giants. He kind of like an OC build. Which one of those guys would you take?
Well, under those circumstances, I mean, Howard's going to be attractive there if he does fall. I don't think he's going to fall, but I'm going with your hypothetical, so I'm appeasing to you, Nick. I mean, he would be one of the guys that I would probably put at the top of my list, and then, you know, I'd probably go second. The offensive lineman out of Wisconsin would probably be number two. And I would say they're probably neck and neck, though his medicals have to check out, though. That's the thing for the offensive lineman. That would be
totally,
the one thing.
Totally
that would be the, that would be,
I think,
yeah, that would be
guy,
why Howard would be
ahead. He's going to be like another Gronk, you know, another freak, you know, at tight end.
Just remember, the tight end spot is pretty deep in this draft. Remember that. It is pretty deep
in
this draft.
I know. I listen to you, Paul. I know. We're gonna be fine. But I was just, you know, I just wanted to know what you guys would say.
I would tell you this. My answer is I'm going to the trenches. You know that.
If
unless the value is way off the board different, If they're anywhere near close, I'm going trenches. And I'm taking the best O-lineman, the tackle, or the best pass rusher available in the trenches. Unless, again, the value is so far off the board that there's a guy sitting up here that should have been taken in the top 10.
All right, well, that was my next question about the trenches. Was last season, was Joe Thomas, was that really a rumor, that, or was it true? Because if that was true, imagine if that would happen this year, the Giants would have took him right away without a question, I would think, because they weren't anticipating Flowers to have a horrible
right.
year like he did.
Here's what I'll tell you.
What if you could get, like you were saying, Riley Reiff, and say we could pick up the guy from Dallas, O'Leary? That would really help us out, I think, right there. That would change the line, and you get a tight end in the draft, like you said, big power back. I think, you know, with that defense, guys, I think we'll be in the hunt. I don't want to speak too soon, but I think that's all we need.
Well, it's going to take quite a bit of economic firepower to bring back the likes of Hankins and JPP than to go out and get a Reef and a Leary.
Yeah,
that's a lot of bread.
Yeah, you're basically addressing every single position.
Like I said, JPP, it might not be likely. You know,
yeah.
They might try to franchise him, and he doesn't want that.
Yeah, you know,
he wants, like you said, Paul, he wants to get the Brinks truck.
You know, in reference to Joe Thomas, let me just make something very clear to you, okay? I know there are a lot of rumors in the media. I have connections around the league as well. I will tell you, outside of this building, no one inside this building ever mentioned Joe Thomas to me. All right, let me make that very clear. Outside of this building, someone I know who has a very strong in with the Browns told me that Joe Thomas was never actually on the trade block, that Coach Hugh Jackson was adamant with his front office about not trading Joe Thomas. And quite frankly, if you want to play this logically, if all it was going to take was a second-round draft pick for any team in the league to pry Joe Thomas away, as was rumored, then somebody would have made that trade because he's worth the number two. But nobody
yeah.
did. Nobody did, which tells you either A, he wasn't on the block, as was rumored, or B, the price was a heck of a lot more than a second-round pick, because somebody would have done it.
Well, and then the third thing that I'll throw in with respect to him is, you know, he's been with the Browns organization for quite some time, and if he's and he's had more than enough ammunition to want to get out of there.
He has said he wants to stay, by the way.
Yeah, well, the point is that he could have gone to the front office, given all the coaching changes and all the GM changes, and he could have said, guys, I am not finding myself thriving in this current circumstances. Get me the hell out of here. And yet, year after year, he stays. So I just don't see why all of a sudden is that going to change when, you know, he was also one of the emotional guys in the center of that huddle when
yes.
they won that first game
yes.
of the season. And you sort of, you know, has indicated that, you know, the veterans are buying into what he's selling with the young guys. I'd be very surprised if Joe Thomas has moved at this point. I really would.
Well, let me ask you this, fellas. If Cruz being gone and Jennings being gone, and say JPP doesn't get signed and Hankins does get signed, then we probably could bring those two guys I just said in, no?
Well, I think what you're talking about, if JPP leaves, and despite the fact that they got a couple of prospects on this roster, you now do have to put a priority in getting a pass-rushing defensive end, and maybe, as you mentioned, Barnett out of Tennessee suddenly becomes much more attractive at 23.
Well, no, what I was saying, Paul, is who the offensive lineman, Leary and
you're talking
and
about whether or not you can afford those two if JPP were to leave?
If JPP were to leave,
I mean, it certainly
gives you
some more
sure
financial flexibility to go after those two, no doubt about it, yeah.
Good. All right, fellas, have a great day.
All right, Nick, appreciate the phone call.
Go Giants. All right.
Sounds good. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We will continue to take more of your phone calls in future shows the rest of the week. Let's just take a quick glance at Twitter, Paul, before we wrap things up. I know a few people wanted to have an opportunity to chime in on the conversation. They may have not been near a phone, as we certainly covered a number of different topics. Let's see. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben. Giants wanted a power back system with Jennings and Williams, both 230-pound backs, and they had very limited success with the both, he's saying. So, meaning just because you label a guy as a power back doesn't mean automatically you're going to have instantaneous success. I don't disagree with that.
A lot of things go into making that power running game effective, and the Giants did not have all of the components.
He also brings up the point, because we say that we doubt guys are going to be available, Miles Jack and Tunzel had no chance at being on the board in terms of last year's situation. and then all of a sudden they became available. Tunzel, though, went pretty early, remember?
Okay. They're now picking at 23.
Yeah, there is a distinct
big difference.
Well, and here's the other thing, though. Miles Jack moved down because new evidence came out about his injury history.
Same thing with Tunzel.
Closer to the draft. Well, Tunzel was more of the day of the draft. We got
evidence.
Images.
Evidence.
All right, evidence.
Evidence.
Well,
moved him down.
All I'm saying is Tunzel had nothing to do with the injury.
No, no. But
Jack
the Giants are now picking at 23. So. Here's the one thing I will say to you, okay? It's a little bit easier to say certain guys will be off the board at 23 than if you're, let's say, at 10, 11, 12. All of a sudden now, no, you don't know. Because if a couple of guys fall, a couple of guys move up, all of a sudden a surprise is there. At 23, you pretty much know, like, O.J. Howard's not going to be there at 23.
And I completely agree with you, Paul, because I think people are operating under the scenario where the Giants have been picking over the last few years, top 12 pick or so, where, you know, yeah, maybe there's a chance somebody falls to you. Now you're further down, and then on top of that, you also need to account for how many teams can move up in front of you and make a trade if a guy continues to drop. A lot more, I think, is in play based on where the Giants are picking this year compared to perhaps what's happened in previous years. With that being said, certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Want to thank Judy Batista once again. If you didn't have an opportunity to hear the interview live, we are going to be putting that clip up specifically on Giants.com so you can hear some of her observations about the franchise tag, JPP, as well as Jonathan Hankins. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.